bringing Southern California together for nearly five decades. This is Spotlight on the Community on 95.5 KLOS. 95.5 KLOS. Now, Spotlight on the Community with Doug McIntyre.
Your taxes have gone up overnight. 12 cents a gallon, 20 cents a gallon for diesel, car registration fees going up, and all of this courtesy of the California legislature and the governor of the state of California. And what's particularly obnoxious about this is that the gas tax hike that the Democrats pushed through with a couple of Republican turncoats who were bribed basically to do so, they pinned this to inflation, which means that this inflationary tax, and it is, especially the 20 cent per gallon diesel tax, means that every delivery charge is going to go up because everything gets on a truck for delivery. So the costs of this will be passed along to the consumers, which adds to inflation.
And which then adds to more gas tax. They already announced in 3 years it'll be 30 cents.
Good Lord.
To talk to us about where we go from here, we welcome back to the show the president of the extremely important Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show, John Kapal. John, how are you?
I'm doing well, Doug and Leanne. How are you doing?
We're okay. You know, this is the day that people start to absorb the reality. And, you know, I had a friend on Facebook the other day who was reacting to the news that the gas was going up 12 cents a gallon with the conspiracy theory that somehow this money is going to end up in the pockets of big oil. And this is how perverse it's gotten, that whatever sins may be committed by big oil, the bottom line is that in California, somehow people managed to inoculate the actual villains of this story and blame big oil rather than the leftists who raised the taxes.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is big oil was just hit with the cap and trade regulatory environment, which is an additional hidden tax on gasoline, because those costs are embedded in the refinery costs. So, yeah, we can blame big oil, but the reality is, and I forgot what the profit per gallon was. I think for oil companies in California, the profit per gallon is like 3 or 4 cents, whereas government is now taking close to a dollar per gallon. So if somebody wants to identify for me who the bad actor is here, as much as we may not like the oil companies, it is the California political establishment.
Yep.
that is making this happen. And one thing, you know, again, why November 1st? Well, they wanted to hide this because this is the first day that the oil companies flip to their winter blend,
right,
which is cheaper to make. So the obvious increase may only be 4 to 5 cents a gallon, but over time, and what people really should be looking at is how much California is paying versus the rest of the nation. Look at those price differentials, and we're now getting close to, you know, when you go to Nevada, you might be paying, you know, $1.89 per gallon, and go, what? So it's the price differential between California and the rest of the nation that is a true metric for how badly we are treated here in California.
We're talking with John Kapal, president of Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, HJTA.org, HJTA.org. John, we're getting very close to the tipping point. I mean, in a lot of ways, we've crossed the tipping point in terms of things like pension liabilities, et cetera. But we're getting close to the tipping point where the population has become so divorced from the economic impact of the policies that they have elected people to pursue, that the consequences are falling on fewer and fewer shoulders. In other words, the wealthy in the state of California are picking up the vast preponderance of the tax burden in the state of California. And we've got politicians that pander to people who are paying less and less of the freight. So that's an unbelievable argument to make on election day. Hey, vote for me and I'll give you a bunch of stuff and someone else is going to have to pay for it.
Yeah, that's always the case, and that's why millionaire taxes always pass. But, you know, California now has a top marginal tax rate of 13.3%, which it does apply to millionaires, and yet we're competing against Nevada, Florida, and Texas, whose top marginal rate is zero, no income tax. So if you're a high-wealth individual and you love California, like many of us love California, pretty soon Austin and Miami Beach and the Gulf Coast start and Las Vegas start looking pretty good. I mean, that is a 3%, a 13.3% haircut you're taking right off the top on everything you make. And we've already begun to see it, both in terms of net domestic out-migration out of the state of California, more than a million people net domestic out-migration in the last 8 years, moving out rather than moving in. We've seen college-educated young people who we want to keep here, but they can't afford rents or let alone houses, so they're finding employment opportunities elsewhere. And we're looking at these demographic trends. At the same time, we're looking at the balance sheet of California with its unfunded liabilities, which you just mentioned, Doug. It is huge. There is, fortunately, we've had at the national level, it appears that we may hit 3% economic growth. That may be the only thing that saves California in the short term, but the long-term prognosis is still very bad.
Here's the disconnect, because, you know, we've been, John, you and I have been talking for over 20 years now. We've been doing this a long time. And going back to the Ray Breen days when Howard Jarvis himself used to basically live on KBC. Prop 13, and it's one of the proud achievements of this radio station. KABC Radio, with Ray Breen as the overnight host here back in the day, was essentially the campaign headquarters for Prop 13. But the bottom line is that this is a very different place than it was then. And we have a lot of people now who will, even with this gas tax, will embrace it and say, good, because gas is bad and CO2s and emissions and blah, 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 blah. And the bottom line is, for all of our pointing our fingers at the problem, for everybody who leaves California, five more people want to come here. Housing costs aren't going down. These two-bedroom fixers are selling for $1.3 million, and there's a line around the block to buy them.
Yeah, you know, I think really the answer is liberals are going to have significant difference of opinions on the side, what the proper role of government is compared to conservatives. However, I do think there might be some common ground here, and that is whatever one perceives as the proper role of government, don't you at least want the money to be spent efficiently? And as we proceed...
If it's not your money, you don't care. You see, that's the problem.
True. But I still think that there are some progressives who don't like waste, fraud, and abuse. And you know we're moving forward with a repeal of this gas tax, and the polling is very much in our favor on that score. But if you look at where the transportation dollars have been wasted, that I think is can be a common thread in the campaign as we move forward. And you're right; some people won't care, but I think there are a lot of people who would put themselves in the so-called liberal camp, who are offended by the fact that we've got a high-speed rail project that's spending billions of dollars that most engineering experts say can never be completed. So, you know, it is a there are some areas of common ground, but overall, I just saw some polling, Doug, yesterday, where for the first time in a long time, a majority of Californians now believe California is in the wrong direction, not the right direction. And that's with a fairly vibrant economy. So we may be turning the corner here. We can only hope. But I think people are starting to get the message. And this gas tax is going to hit a lot of working class people who are living paycheck to paycheck. And that, I think, has some opportunities for fiscal conservatives.
Last question, John. Eric Garcetti has decided not to run for governor of the state of California. And I just wanted to get your opinion on this. There's no way of really knowing. How much of the reality of the next 4 years in California do you think shaped that decision? Eric Garcetti could run for governor, he could run for Senate, and he can run for president. And he's young enough and I would argue for career possibilities, running for president isn't a bad move for Eric Garcetti. To get his name out there, he might end up as a VP pick, if nothing else. People in Iowa and places like that will know who he is in the future. But I also think that he knows what the next 4 years are going to look like for the next governor when these bills come due.
Do you really want to sign up to be captain of the Titanic?
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, once those unfunded liabilities hit, it is going to be a world of pain, and people are going to be very angry. I would not want to be sitting in the governor's office when that first recession hits, and the stock option revenue and the capital gains revenue from the wealthy, upon which you just mentioned it, we rely so heavily, if that disappears with all the promises we've made to the public employees, we're going to be in a world of hurt, and I would not want to be in the corner office of the Capitol, which is where the governor sits. That's going to be some. There's going to be some serious pain going on in California when that first recession hits.
All right. Listen, as always, John, thanks so much for coming on with us. The website is hjta.org, the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. And if you own a home or a business property in the state of California and you're not following the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, you're cutting your own throat. Thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it. If you had to fill up your car yesterday, you know you paid a lot more courtesy of largely the Democrats in Sacramento as well as the governor.
I heard $3.42 now.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how high the price goes, because this was timed to roll out now, because this is traditionally when gas prices are the lowest in California, when the winter formulations are out and they're cheaper to make. So the in addition to stabbing people in the front, not in the back, because this is a poor tax and it's inflationary, the reason that this was rolled out on November 1st is because they could hide it a little bit, because the 12 cents per gallon hike in taxes and 20 cents on diesel wouldn't be as bad as in the summer when the gas prices are high to begin with. But nonetheless, there's an opportunity here for Republicans in the state of California. If they play this right, and to talk to us about it is the Republican California State Senator from Riverside County. A pleasure to welcome to the show, Jeff Stone. Good morning, Senator Stone. How are you?
Good morning. Delighted to be with you this morning.
So certainly the nearly moribund Republican Party in California needs an issue. And this is an issue that is not complex. It's simple, and it affects everybody, including a lot of people who have been exempted from some of the most noxious and expensive policies the Democrats have unloaded, because they loaded it on the top-tier income earners. But this one hits everybody and the poor the hardest.
It sure does. It's a regressive tax, and it's the most colossal ripoff in the state of California, this tax. And the reason why is, before the legislature passes gas tax, we have the seventh highest gas taxes in the country, except our state does something that no other state does. We take state gas revenues, and we don't spend it on roads or bridges. We spend it on social programs. And so you're absolutely right. They pick a time when the blends are a little bit cheaper in the winter, and the 12 cents gets added on November 1st. And then, but really, where people are really going to get angry is in January 1st, when the vehicle license fees start coming in. The average is going to be $100 a person. If you're driving a nice Lexus, Mercedes, Tesla, it's going to go up $175, but the Tesla will go up $275, because if you have an electric car, including a Leaf or a Volt, there's an extra $100 surcharge on there, because you're not contributing any way to the gas taxes to help maintain the highways. And it's indexed for inflation. And it just, you know, if there was a true need and a nexus, because our gas taxes weren't enough to maintain our roads, it'd be one thing. But the legislature, this is nothing more than a power tax grab by Sacramento that has an addiction to spending and will continue to even go after property taxes this year, because so far they haven't seen a big rebellion from taxpayers with all these new taxes, including the Prop 30 taxes that Governor Brown said, oh, these are just temporary. Let me tell you, my friends, there's no such things as a temporary tax in the state of California. Once they grab it and they've got it, they aren't going to let it go.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And the thing is, what I fear is, the last time we had a car registration fee. It became a major accelerant to the recall of Governor Gray Davis. But because the way Schwarzenegger's administration fizzled out, I think the people really basically just, there doesn't appear to be anybody leading on this issue. There doesn't appear to be, I think the folks feel like they got burned because Schwarzenegger ended up essentially being Democrat light and brought in a lot of these onerous, global warming initiatives and carbon exchanges and all this stuff that have been anti-business and just doubled down on the things that he was sent there to undo.
Well, you're absolutely right. There's been nothing but a knee-jerk reaction since President Trump got elected. I mean, this legislature cannot get over the fact that when we reconvened in January, that it wasn't President Hillary Clinton, it was President Trump. And now that California has pulled, or the United States has pulled out of the Paris Accords, California now wants a seat at that table. And as you know, they passed another aggressive round of cap and trade extension taxes that will begin in 2020. So here you only saw the price of regular glass of gasoline go up around 12, 14 cents a gallon and diesel 20 cents. But starting in 2020, when cap and trade starts, we're looking at 63 cents to 93 cents a gallon in just a short 2.5 years. So hold on to your pocketbooks because the state's not through grabbing your money. And a lot of that cap and trade money is paying for what? It's paying for Jerry Brown's Train to Nowhere, which, by the way, leaves a tremendous carbon footprint. It's just a total debacle. It's just a way for the legislature to grab more money to pay for social programs, including many for undocumented immigrants that are in the state of California.
Okay, now here's the question. How does this get turned around? Because and I just mean this because it's true. The California Republican Party is in it's flirting with becoming a minor party in this state. The brand is so damaged in this state, and basically, the toxic level of ignorance is that anything that goes wrong will just be blamed on Trump. It doesn't matter. It's just going to be blamed on Trump, and that's the way it's going to be played. So, how does the California Republican Party make an issue of this that resonates with voters who now are so have such anathema in this state to the Republican brand? How does it turn into an opposition party that actually can oppose something?
Well, as you know, we had our Republican assembly leader that made the comments that we need to be relevant in Sacramento. And the way he became, or he thought we'd become relevant, is to support these cap and trade taxes and give all these Democrats that are in targeted districts a pass on voting for these cap and trade taxes, which was completely wrong. He was removed as the leader of the assembly. And I said, you know what, we got to get back to our identity as the party of Reagan, the party of low taxes, the party of smaller government, the party of personal responsibility. And frankly, we just have to get more Republicans elected, but we got to do some house cleaning and we got to reestablish where the Republican Party stands for and not let some rogue leaders in our party try to tell us what we should transform ourselves to be. We've had a lot of success when we are the party of Reagan, and we just need to get more Republicans elected to the state legislature because right now the Democrats have a two-thirds majority. And I'm going to tell you right now that property taxes are going to be on the plate in the next coming legislative session. They have the two-thirds majority to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot to repeal Prop 13. And as you know, the Attorney General and Secretary of State do not put initiative summaries on the ballot that are commensurate with what the citizens are voting for. So they're going to make it sound like it's the best, greatest tax break to mankind when they put it on the initiative, and they will bamboozle our citizens once again into voting something that is just not what it's supposed to be. And we're going to continue to see higher taxes, and especially with these cap and trade taxes and the gas taxes, we're just driving more of our small businesses out of state. People are fleeing the state because it's just becoming too expensive. And, what can we do about it? Well, I know my friend Travis Allen is running for governor. People can support him. And also, he's doing an initiative to repeal the gas tax. So it's really important that when that gets on the ballot, and I believe it will get on the ballot, I believe that the citizens of the state of California are going to say, no to these taxes. Use what we give you. Use it conservatively. Use it responsible-wise. And you won't need to come back to the well time and time again for more taxes from the hardworking Californians, especially in my district, that drive an average of 120, 140 miles round trip to go to work. This really hurts working-class people in the state of California.
Well, it definitely does that. Jeff Stone, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it. California State Senator from Riverside County. Appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we have been covering for a long time the so-called road diet that enraged so many people in the Vista Del Mar and the Venice Boulevard area because we live in the most traffic-clogged city in North America. And what did your elected representatives do? They deliberately made traffic worse. And this has resulted in a recall movement against City Councilman Mike Bonin. And joining us right now is the co-chair of that movement. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show from recallbonin.com, Alexis Edelston. Alexis, how are you?
Great. Good morning. How's everything going today?
I'm okay. Your speaker's a little muffled there, but we'll try to do our best to hear you loud and clear. So walk us through what happened. You had a press event at L.A. City Hall. And you filed paperwork to do what?
Great, yeah. So yesterday we filed the notice of intent to recall Mike Bonin. This initiates officially the process for the recall. What happens next is the councilman has an opportunity to respond. And then we filed the petition and we start collecting signatures 28 days from yesterday. So the petition, the signature gathering drive will start towards the end of November, and we'll have 120 days to gather 27,000 verified signatures of registered voters that live in the district.
Now, what does I'm unclear because obviously I've never done this personally. What does the councilman's response mean? I mean, what he just he can't thwart. I mean, he can't issue a response that scuttles your objective.
Well, what happens is on the petition, our statement of reason or the reason behind the recall will be on the petition where people will be signing.
Uh-huh.
So it'll say this is why we're gathering signatures for the recall, and it gives the council person an opportunity to counter the rationale or the reasoning behind that. So it's up to him as to whether to respond or not. And then that's available for the registered voters in the district to read and understand what his perspective or rationale may be to the accusations or the reason for the recall.
Got it.
Exactly.
All right, we're talking with Alexis Edelston. Again, the website is recallbonin.com. Now, very recently, in fact, the closer we got to this deadline, the city councilman has announced that the lanes that were taken away are going to be returned, that there's a process in place to return those lanes. They always called this a pilot program. Personally, I believe that the only reason this is happening is because of the protest and the political pressure that's put on them. But because those lanes are being returned, is there any purpose in the recall at this point?
Well, great question. A couple things. The lanes that are being returned are only on the in the Playa del Rey. And that's important to note because Playa del Rey, like you mentioned, was quote-unquote a pilot program. It was not tied to Vision Zero or Mobility Plan 2035. The Venice Boulevard in Mar Vista, that is tied to those citywide programs. You can't back away from those because that would affect be a domino effect to all 15 districts in the city. So the Playa del Rey was independent of that. Now, it's important to note that in Playa del Rey, only the lanes in downtown near the stores and near the businesses, it's still one lane. So there's still going to be a bottleneck. It's not necessarily resolving it 100%. But the Venice Boulevard in Mar Vista, he hasn't mentioned and he will not back down. In fact, he's actually putting out misinformation about the streets being more safe when, in fact, the accident injury rates have increased since the lane diets have been installed. And as part of Mobility Plan 2035 and Vision Zero, there are 19 other streets in the district that are slated for a different road reconfiguration treatments. And those streets include Lincoln Boulevard, Wilshire, Santa Monica, Sepulveda, Centinella, Bundy, Pico, and many other streets in the district. So this isn't something that's actually stopping, and that's why we're continuing with the process. And that's not even to mention the recent casualty that happened last Wednesday in Venice on Pacific Boulevard, and also a couple of the other casualties that have happened on Vista Del Mar because of Bonin's negligence and incompetence, and that's why we're continuing with the recall.
Well, last Wednesday, Damon Eric Shear, a 40-year-old, was crossing Pacific Avenue within a designated crosswalk when a car hit him and killed him. And this crosswalk had been slated for a safety upgrade, but according to Councilman Bonin's office, because of red tape involving federal and state grants, the flashing lights, the LEDs weren't put up. And, you know, we asked the obvious question, if we had money to build bike lanes, why, and to take lanes away, why didn't we just start by making the crosswalk safer? There's no argument over that. Everybody agrees we should do that.
Yeah, Doug, this is an outrage. For those that don't know, the Los Angeles Department of Transportation, as far back as July of 2014, had recommended and approved the flashing lights signs be installed on Pacific and Sunset, where the accident took place. The United States Department of Transportation allocated federal monies to actually install these lights. And let me tell you, these lights to install and purchase only cost $10,000. And I don't know what amount of red tape the councilman may be referring to, but if he can't, in a period of over 3 years, find $10,000 to put up safety measures that are recommended and approved by the city, the state, and the federal transportation departments, then he has, you know, he should find another line of work, because that is not the type of council person that the district deserves. And it actually raises alarms, because there's 46 other intersections in the county of Los Angeles that have been identified for these safety measures that have not received them. And we don't know to this date how many of those actually lie in the district and how many of those lie in the rest of LA City. Obviously, there's 46 of them. So what this is telling us, that in over 3 years, there's 45 other intersections that have been slated and identified as dangerous that haven't been addressed and haven't had any lights installed. And then the other outrage is the potential of quid pro quo, because on Pacific and Market near Snapchat and the Snapchat corporate headquarters, they've had these lights and crosswalks installed over the span of the last year. And if you look at the campaign donations to Bonin's reelection campaign, thousands of dollars were donated from Snapchat C-level executives to Bonin's reelection campaign. And they had their crosswalks and flashing lights installed without any issue, without any red tape, and without any delay of over 3 years. And again, no casualties over there, but the casualty of Doug Shear, father of three children, that is solely responsible on the councilman, and his inability to lead, his inability and his negligence.
Well, we'll certainly invite the councilman to come on back and to comment on all of this. But we thank you for coming on with us, Alexis. We'll continue to cover the story. The website is recallbonin.com, and we're going to follow the process until it comes to an end, one way or another. Alexis,
Doug,
thanks for being with us.
Thank you again. And as always, I keep asking the media that I am open to debate the councilman anytime, anywhere. I'd love to have an opportunity to debate this with him. He seems to not really have the impudence to actually do this. And we'd also like to ask people to continue to donate, because we're at $100,000. We're looking to get a $200,000, and that's important because we need that money to help get the signatures to get the recall on the ballot.
All right.
Thanks again for your time and your support.
You're listening to Spotlight on the Community on 95.5 KLOS. I'm Doug McIntyre. Make sure you listen to McIntyre in the morning, weekdays 5 to 10 on Talk Radio 790 KBC AM.
On the next Frosty, Heidi, and Frank.
You'll have more chances to win $1,000 on the new 4K a day on KLOS. Also, Christian Hand will be joining us at 9 o'clock to break down a rock song.
Frosty, Heidi, and Frank. Weekday mornings 5:30 to 9:30 on the Rock of Southern California, 95.5 KLOS.
Do you know how fast you were going, son?
Call me Ed.
Do you know how fast you were going, Ed?
You mean exactly?
Yes, exactly.
No, not exactly. How fast?
Fast.
Fast, sir?
You were going very fast.
Fast is my job, officer.
Fast is your job?
Yes, sir.
What kind of job?
I deliver, sir.
What do you deliver?
The world's greatest gourmet sandwiches.
I thought Jimmy John's had the world's greatest gourmet sandwiches.
Jimmy John's does have the world's greatest gourmet sandwiches.
So you deliver for Jimmy John's?
I deliver for Jimmy John's.
So do you always deliver fast?
I always deliver fast.
How fast?
I deliver subs so fast you'll freak.
It's not smart to freak a cop, son.
You didn't order Jimmy John's sub, sir.
So if I did order a Jimmy John's sub, when would I get it?
Now.
What if I don't want it now?
Then call later.
Or I can pick it up myself.
Or you can pick it up yourself.
Because I'm pretty fast too.
I'm sure you are, sir.
Very fast.
I believe you, sir.
Faster than you.
No way, sir.
Way faster.
In your dreams.
You dissing me, son.
No, sir, I'm polite.
Fast and polite.
Very polite and very, very fast.
Is that a challenge, son?
No, sir, it's a fact.
Let's burn rubber, kid.
It wouldn't be fair.
Why not?
You've got a fully blown V8 Camaro with slicks and headers.
So?
I've got a 10-speed bike.
I'll let you off with a warning.
Order Jimmy John's sandwich delivery today. Jimmy John's, where fresh and fast meet.
Battery Systems offers a variety of quality products like Optima batteries. Their unique spiral cell technology gives Optima batteries over 15 times more vibration resistance and increased cycle life compared to traditional batteries. Find your closest store at batterysystems.net. Battery Systems, your single source solution.
The quest for a world championship ends here. The Auto Club NHRA Finals, November 9th through 12th at Auto Club Raceway in Pomona. Feel the power that pummels the senses with 10,000 horsepower at speeds over 330 miles per hour. Points and a half will be awarded for the first time in finals history, so the stakes are higher than ever before. It's the NHRA Mellow Yellow Countdown to the Championship, and the time is now. Don't miss Nitro Fuel Stars Ron Cast, Courtney Force, Antron Brown, and all your favorites as they battle side-by-side and fight to the finish line. Who will be the next NHRA Mellow Yellow World Champions? Every ticket's a pit pass. Bring the whole family. And don't forget, kids 12 and under are free in general admission seating. You won't want to miss the Auto Club NHRA Finals, November 9th through 12th at Auto Club Raceway at Pomona. Great seats are still available. Purchase early and save at NHRA.com/tickets or call 800-884-NHRA today.
A reminder, the free Money Matters seminar is 1 p.m. tomorrow, Courtyard by Marriott Laguna Hills, or 7 p.m. Tuesday, Courtyard Los Angeles, Pasadena, Old Town. If you're retired or retiring soon, don't miss this event. Register now at moneymatters.net. That's moneymatters.net.
95.5 KLOS.
Spotlight on the community now resumes with Doug McIntyre.
Tax reform was one of the major campaign promises of then-candidate Trump. And President Trump, House Republican leaders rolled out a tax reform plan. Kevin Brady, who is the principal author of this tax proposal, said the following.
I predict under this tax reform plan, America will vault from 31st in the world among our competitors to the top three as the best places on the planet for that next new job, that next new manufacturing plant, that next new research headquarters.
And Paul Ryan, of course, the House Speaker, said the following.
With this plan, the typical family of four will save $1,182 a year on their taxes. With this plan, we are getting rid of loopholes for special interests, and we are leveling the playing field. We're making things so simple that you can do your taxes on a form the size of a postcard.
Well, as always, whenever we talk taxes, we like to get the following gentleman on board with us because he knows this stuff better than anybody we've ever spoken to in the legislative sphere. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Congressman Tom McClintock. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Good morning, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Well, here's the thing. If you're happy, I'll be happy. So are you happy with this proposal?
Yeah, overall, absolutely. It is going to trigger, I think, explosive economic growth because of the corporate tax reforms, which you just quoted from Kevin Brady is absolutely right. We have currently have the highest corporate tax rate in the entire industrialized world. That has sent trillions of dollars of capital and millions of American jobs overseas. By getting it back down to 20% from 35%, it's estimated that's going to generate about $5 trillion dollars of new economic activity in the American economy. And that's going to include, by the way, about $2 trillion of direct tax revenues to all levels of government because of the expanding economy over the next decade. That by itself is absolutely vital, and it fulfills the mandate the American people have given us to revive the economy.
Now, this stuff is always over my head with my BA in English, Tom. So I've been reading as much as I can on it. The Wall Street Journal seems to agree with you in terms of the corporate side of this, that the reforms that are being pushed are long overdue. But there's a lot of concern, especially for those of us living here in California who own a home, about the mortgage deductions and the state and local tax deductions. Because if we're paying taxes on essentially taxes, then we're being double taxed.
Well, yes, and I would prefer that the deduction remain. I mean, obviously, I'm a Californian. I pay California taxes and California prices. However, the quote that you had from the realtor earlier is absolutely flat out wrong. What he's ignoring is the fact that even as the state income tax deduction is going away, property taxes remaining up to $10,000, mortgage interest deductions remaining up to the first $500,000 of loan, and at the same time, he's ignoring the fact that rates are coming down, the standard deduction is doubling, and the result is, as the speaker said, the average middle-class household can expect about $1,100 of tax reductions next year.
We're talking now, with Congressman—
By the way, and I just add one other thing. Wall Street Journal's right. Because they leave the top marginal rate intact, it's that portion of the bill is not going to stimulate a lot of growth. The growth is going to be stimulated on the business side.
We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock, who you can follow on Twitter at Rep. McClintock. What does it mean for the alternate minimum tax to go away?
Well, the alternate minimum tax was designed for those who have a huge number of deductions to ensure that they're still paying some tax. That went into effect in the 1970s. Unfortunately, it was never indexed, so it first applied to just a few people. And over the years, because of inflation, it now affects a large amount of the upper middle class. I'm not sure of the implications because we're getting rid of so many deductions. I'm not sure the AMT would be triggered, but it was designed to assure that people pay some tax. Unfortunately, what it's done is to establish two tax systems, and folks with upper middle class incomes who are over 100, 150,000 who are making a lot of deductions end up paying much higher tax.
Yeah, one of the things that the Wall Street Journal, I read a piece, actually it wasn't the Journal, but I read a piece last night that said that buried in this bill, even though it's advertised as preserving the 39.6% upper tax bracket, but it actually creates a new tax bracket of 46% for individuals who make $1 million or couples that make $1.2 million. Can you tell us about that?
Well, no, you've explained it correctly, and that's a really stupid part of the bill. You know, as I said, on the personal income tax side, we're not going to see a lot of growth stimulated. It's going to be a relief to middle-income families, but the growth is on the marginal rates, not the inframarginal rates. By leaving that top marginal rate intact, and as you point out, even putting in this bubble surcharge from $1 million to $1.2 million, you are vastly limiting the potential growth that those tax cuts would otherwise generate.
Now, Congressman, what would you say to people who say, look, the growth is obviously good. We want the economy to grow. And everybody understands that the corporate President Obama used to talk about how the corporate tax rate in America was too high. So, I mean, we always kind of had bipartisan agreement on that, although nobody ever did anything about it. But for somebody who's just looking at their taxes going up on the individual level, who doesn't really, you know, maybe their investments will do better, but they're not, you know, their income isn't tied to the market. It's tied to salary. But they're looking at losing deductions that are critical to them or having them certainly rein back significantly.
At the upper income levels, over $1 million, that may be the case. But I've been looking at under $1 million, and I yet cannot find a band of taxpayers that does worse under this new system. There's a tax reduction for everybody. For some, many thousands of dollars. For example, if you're a single renter earning $60,000, I calculate that you're gonna see about a $2,000 to $3,000 reduction in your tax bill. If you're a family with a $400,000 mortgage, two kids earning $80,000 a year, you're going to see about a $500 reduction in your taxes. But I think below, I have not yet been able to find a band of taxpayers who does worse under this system under $1 million.
Well, if you can't find it, I'm not going to find it. So,
well, I'm still looking. That doesn't mean they're not there, and I am still looking. If anybody can calculate their new tax under this reform and see an increase, please let me know, because we don't want that to happen.
Now, Congressman, let's talk about the politics of this, because, of course, predictably, Charles Schumer and the Democrats are going to say that it's a Christmas gift to the richest in the country. It's a handout to corporations, blah, 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 blah. Even though, as I pointed out, President Obama himself had talked about how it was important that we reduce the corporate tax rates because they're the highest in the world. So
well,
with that,
go ahead. I was going to say, when they say, oh, this is just a tax break for rich corporations, they forget the dirty little secret of corporate taxation. Corporations do not pay corporate taxes. There are only three possible ways that a corporate tax can be paid. They're paid by us as consumers through higher prices, they're paid by us as employees through lower wages, and they're paid by us as investors through lower earnings on our pension and 401k plans. Those are the only three possible ways a corporate tax can be paid. Corporations don't pay that tax. They collect it from consumers, employees, and investors.
Well, it's the same concept, lost concept, that there's something known as government money, because all government money is the people's money, and it always has been and always will be. But that obviously is going to be the drumbeat. And this is a new phenomenon because of the unique character of President Trump and the passions of his supporters. He's a populist, and there were many times during the campaign when Donald Trump campaigned against Wall Street and talked about the greedy fat cats. And because what seems to be the lead on this is the cut to corporate taxes, is there a chance that some of his base in Congress will be pressured to peel off on this, that there's not enough for the individuals?
I'm sure that's a possibility, but on the flip side of that, if we can get this through and the economic impact is as positive as the economists are telling us, it will be morning again in America by this time next year. I mean, we have to remember, under the Obama years, we averaged 1.5% annual economic growth. That's half our normal growth rate. The normal growth rate in the post-war years has been 3%. Reagan got it up to 3.5% average during his administration, and he did it by reducing tax and regulatory burdens that were crushing the economy. The administration has made major progress in reducing the regulatory burdens, and we're seeing the economy expand. If to that we can add fiscal reform through this tax relief measure, the effects are going to be explosive. And by this time next year, everybody's going to be feeling it.
Thank you so much, as always. We always appreciate you spending time with us. And follow Congressman McClintock on Twitter at Rep. McClintock. Thanks so much, Congressman.
My pleasure, Doug. Thanks for having me.
All right. With the announcement the accusation that Kevin Spacey had sexually assaulted a 14-year-old many years ago, and he didn't deny it. He just simply said he had no memory of it. The shoes continue to drop on something that has been a human phenomenon for as long as there have been humans, basically, and that is the leveraging of physical and or political and or economic power of men over women, or men over men, or women over women. The bottom line is it is the power structure that is being exposed in so many aspects of society, not just in Hollywood. Hollywood gets the headlines because it involves famous and accomplished people, but it's something that waitresses have dealt with, that people have dealt with in literally every walk of life. Joining us right now to talk about the Washington, D.C. edition of this, and we've already seen 140 legislators and employees up in Sacramento talk about what's going on in Sacramento, but now allegations about sexual harassment on Capitol Hill. Joining us to talk about this is California Congresswoman Jackie Speier. Welcome back to the show, Jackie Speier. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning.
Thank you for being with us. So you posted a video online Friday morning of last week saying that a chief of staff forcibly kissed you and stuck his tongue down your mouth when you were working as a congressional staffer And that goes back to the Leo Ryan days, who, of course, died in Jonestown.
Diana.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yes, and you were wounded during that horrible assault. We've talked about that before. So this is something that has just been going on, really, for time immemorial.
No question about it. It really became a legal offense in the 80s. In the 80s, sexual harassment was a term that became known as an assault and then was viewed as a violation of an individual. We see it happening in closed systems everywhere. And by closed systems, I mean where you have an internal process, there are non-disclosure agreements, and where persons who are powerless and fear that they will be blackballed either don't report, or if they do report, sign non-disclosure agreements because they want to be able to continue to work in that environment.
Well, I totally agree, and I think that the Weinstein story came at the right time to sort of force a long overdue national discussion about this topic, because again, it's not just Hollywood. The casting couch, which is something that's been around for as long as there's been casting, is one issue. But it opens up a whole host of issues. And how far and wide this conversation goes remains to be seen. But it's something that's long overdue. And the non-disclosure agreement aspect of it, I think, has facilitated predators and allowed them to continue to pray, whether it was, the way the Catholic Church, for instance, covered up the sex abuse of minors for generations, for maybe centuries. And basically, if you were a person who was violated by a priest, you had to go up against the awesome power of the church. It was a family disgrace. Who's going to believe you? But the same thing is true for waitresses who, you know, are paying the family bill, and now all of a sudden they find out that their shift supervisor or the owner of the restaurant, in order to get more tables or a better station or more hours, wants something in return.
Exactly right. And in Congress, the process is so tilted in favor of the predator or the institution that the victim is loath to move forward. For instance, if you want to file a complaint against someone in Congress, you have to go through 30 days of counseling, and then you have 15 days to determine whether or not you want to go through mediation, and then you have another 30 days before you can even file a complaint. Meanwhile, you are expected to continue to work in that hostile work environment. I have a bill that will change all of that. I'm going to require mandatory training of members and staff in what is sexual harassment, because believe it or not, we don't even have that requirement. It's totally volitional, and so no one ever seeks to get that kind of training, whereas we have ethic training that is mandatory. So we are spending about $1 million a year on sexual harassment settlements in Congress that we don't even know about.
Well, we're talking with Congresswoman Jackie Speier. You can follow on Twitter at Rep Speier, S-P-E-I-E-R. This is not shocking. I mean, let's face it, until relatively recently, Capitol Hill itself was maybe the ultimate boys club. I mean, those walls have changed in terms of elective office and staff positions. But the culture was ingrained over a very, very long period of time. And you know, one of the things that we've observed, and this is the sort of the sad commentary of the times, because we are living in such partisan times, I often wonder whether people really care about the victims or they just want to hang a loss on the other side, because everybody was very happy when it was Bill Clinton, and then they weren't so happy when it was Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly, and then they were happy that it was Harvey Weinstein because of his connections to the Democratic Party. And as long as people are just trying to score cheap political points on this, we're forgetting about the actual victims.
You're absolutely right. And it's got to be a victim-centered approach. And until we change that system, until we prevent non-disclosure agreements, until we open up the system, that kind of conduct will be able to fester. And these aren't one-off cases. This isn't where someone just loses their mind one day and sexually harasses or sexually assaults someone. Typically, they're predators. We've seen it now with Weinstein. We've seen it with Mark Halperin. You know, the floodgates open, and all of a sudden, there's a lot of Me Toos.
Yep, there certainly are. And again, the conditions that you've talked about in Capitol Hill are kind of amazing, because this is another example, frankly, of where Congress has exempted itself or set up a different standard of behavior that doesn't apply in the rest of the workforce.
That's exactly right. I tried to get an amendment to our rules back in 2014, and they wouldn't even make the amendment in order to have a vote on it. I then got funding so that there would be more training available in a House bill, and then it was taken out on the Senate. There's this denial that goes on that somehow if we don't talk about it, if we put our heads in the sand, it's not going on.
Well, every day another headline story comes out, so this one's not going away, and it shouldn't go away. Hey, thank you for coming on and talking to us about it. We appreciate it.
Thank you for shining a light on it.
All right. Appreciate that, Congresswoman Jackie Speier.
This has been Spotlight on the Community, 95.5 KLOS. I'm Doug McIntyre, Talk Radio 790 KBC AM.